right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight, as a lot of happenings, some off-season, some on-season. We've got the Pacers making moves. They signed Miles Turner. They have traded Damon Rudez. I don't know how you say his first name, but he's not here anymore, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. Traded him for Chase Budinger. There was rumors the Pacers would be looking to sign Jordan Hill, who was last with the Lakers. So a lot going on there, as we've seen Larry Bird rebuilding his Pacers team. We've got the British Open Championship. The Open Championship, as it's officially known, starts Thursday. And that we'll talk a little bit about that as we've got Glass on tonight, but not Wednesday. So we'll talk some golf here very shortly as the third major of the year is upon us. And speaking of major, it's not quite the same, but it's a major weekend for Major League Baseball as they take nearly a week off for their All-Star weekend. Started yesterday with the Futures game and Indiana's own or former Indiana player, Kyle Schwarber, was the voted the MVP of the Futures game. Had a very nice night indeed. And today is the Home Run Derby, although it's in danger of being rained out or at least affected by the rain. Some nasty storms came through early. I'm sure everybody saw that in the area. And then the All-Star game is tomorrow night. And obviously, Glass, when you talk about the All-Star game, you unfortunately the last few years have to talk about what it means for baseball and particularly for the postseason. I don't know if there's any rumblings of changing the outcome affecting or determining home field advantage for the playoffs and particularly the World Series, but it seems like it's here to stay. You tell me, you're a bigger baseball fan. Has it played a part in the postseason the last couple of years? I mean, has it seemed to matter at all when it comes down to it?
Well, if you want to pitch the seventh game in your park, that's going to be part of the deal that has to go right for you, and it's completely out of your control, which I find is completely fraudulent. What is the point of having a 162-game season besides lining the owner's pockets with 81 home games if none of that counts? I understand the point that the All-Star game needed some juice in the sense where you can't run out of pitchers, you can't run out of guys, but I think putting home field advantage to determine the champion of your league on a 162-game season isn't the right way to do that. The other problem with it is the game is not managed like a regular game. It's managed like an exhibition. You have fans putting in the players via vote to start the game. You have pitchers pitching one inning because of pitch counts and participation rules. So why this matters at the end of the day is completely ridiculous, and it makes baseball look a little silly. But since those are the rules and that's what you have to play by, yes, it quote-unquote gives you incentive to win, but again, the guy from the name the team, if he's their only representative, he's not going to go out there and pitch any worse because the All-Star game's on the line. These guys play for pride.
They have pride, exactly.
They have to talk to guys in the locker room. They're going to get grief from their buddies if they give up three hits and three batters and get yanked when they come back. So baseball is a very individualistic sport played on a team as opposed to having, you know, if the right guard doesn't pull on that play, lots of bad things can happen. If the right fielder goes 0 for 4, you can still win 22 to nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of gets lost in all this. So putting all of that on this game for me, It doesn't make any sense. And the great news for the fans is what? Well, the game's played, their voice is heard. So basically what I think baseball is doing here is it's CYA. They're covering every base they can so nobody can say, hey, look, we're not doing anything, and that's going to happen again. We're talking about the tie. I believe that was, what, Milwaukee in 08 or something, 09, 10, whenever it was. And you know what? That's how unimportant the All-Star game is because nobody can remember when that happened.
Exactly. It was appalling at the time, and we talked about it for about 3 months.
It was because it was appalling because for a league that goes through all this other stuff, they can't figure out how to end the All-Star game if this ever happened. Well, that's a problem. In 2011, the St. Louis Cardinals won Game 7 against the Texas Rangers. In 12, the Giants swept Detroit. In 13, Boston won Game 6 in St. Louis. So the Cardinals would have had Game 7 on their home field. And last year, the Giants, I'm pretty sure, won in the AL Park. Yes, they did.
I thought that was Game 6, yeah.
Against, was 4-0. Madison Bumgarner came out of the pen and pitched those final two and whatever, three and a quarter, three and a third innings, and they beat the Royals 4-3 in the AL Park. But Game 7. So, again, it did have an influence, but when Madison Bumgarner pitched like that, it didn't really matter. He could have pitched in the Sandlot, and he still would have beat them. So the Cardinals won Game 7. I believe these are that category has got to be Park, isn't it? Yeah. They won Game 7 in Texas, it says here. It says AL next to Texas, so that's been influenced by it. But it's weird that the road team has won that game, the Cardinals winning that one and this one. So in a perfect world, you'd love to have the home field advantage. You'd always rather play 4 at home than 4 on the road. It hasn't stopped it, but it just looks like a silly. It should be an exhibition, right? Pete Rose runs over Ray Fossey, and everybody says, "Oh, look how hard they play and they do this." Guys in baseball always try because they play for themselves. They want to make a play.
And at the end of the day, nobody wants to send their guys to the All-Star game and have them get beat up like Ray Fossey.
Exactly right.
I mean, maybe back then they did.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. But guys playing hard and playing smart, sure. A guy's not going to go barreling over the catcher. Heck, they changed that rule too. Maybe a guy doesn't dive into the stands for a foul ball. But he probably does because it's the instinct takes over.
They don't turn it off.
But you know, the guys wear their different shoes. They got their kids on the field with them. You're taking videos in the dugout, then they say go bat a couple innings later. So how that determines who should be the home field advantage in the marquee event of your season, it's not the All-Star game, folks. It is the World Series. Just leaves something to be desired. Do I have a solution for the problem? No, I don't. The All-Star game's best solution would be to play the weekend after the World Series as a true exhibition like the NFL Pro Bowl does and just call it what it is, an exhibition. Guys that just finished the World Series aren't going to play. They'll show up, do their interviews, take pictures. The guys that have earned the spot that want to play at that end of the year can do it.
Well, here, I've got a goofy solution for you. Instead of home field advantage, if the AL wins the All-Star game, they get the designated hitter in the World Series for the entire thing, and the NL does not.
Well, what's the
NL?
If
the NL wins, the AL has to bat all their pitchers.
Now, you could already say that's already...
It's affecting the World Series, so it's still goofy.
But it's funny that the National League has won two of those series in Game 7s in the American League Park.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I asked that question, because yes, it is. I'm not going to argue. It's not goofy. It's not, extremely goofy.
It's not the right way to finish it out.
162 games, you can't figure that out, really. That can't play a part. I mean, you have to get over the idea that you can't get hotel rooms and all that sort of thing. Yes. Of course you can. Of course you can.
You're Major League Baseball. Yeah, you have $1 billion.
Rent a couple houses. I mean, there's some kind of executives there that'll give it to you.
The perfect world would be a 3-game series. You play it Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
For the All-Star game?
Everybody gets a chance to play.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a chance to pitch. Nobody misses it because they started on Saturday or on Sunday, and you'd have a 3-day series. Maybe you play 7 inning games instead of 9. I don't care what it would be, but that's
or
not.
Or just do the old spring game thing. Just make it.
It's not a break. That's the problem.
You know, a bean and weenies or a steak.
Softball game. Who cares? Have a softball game.
Speaking of softball games,
throw it out there.
The
Why
home
not?
Run derby is tonight, and this is a glorified softball game.
It's
an exhibition. I will
Which
say
they
this.
Can't even get that right.
I will say
they
this.
Change they change that every year.
The last couple years, we've seen some new names come in this, and it's added some excitement. But I'm looking at this lineup, and what you've got right now is you've got some established long-term stars. You've got some brand new stars. You got some neat names in it this year.
You know what? The All-Star Game Home Run Derby contest has turned into the NBA Dunk Contest. It's
Absolutely.
A miracle.
Absolutely.
If you get a big
it
name
just takes
game,
too damn
and,
long.
Oh my God.
It takes
well,
too
now,
damn long.
They've changed that this year. They used to go, you got 10 outs where the guy would pitch, and if the ball didn't go over the fence in any capacity, you're out. Right? So a guy can hit 72 home runs in the first round, and he's going to have
And they've got match play up front here, too.
He's going to be the advantage. Now it's on a time system where you get 4 minutes because of the weather. They've cut it down to 4 instead of 5. And you get a chance to knock as many out of the park as you do. But as we heard before we went on the air, the system's still flawed just like it always is. And anything that has to do with almost sudden death, it's a heads-up matchup. So Dave goes first. You hit 6. I hit 6, I hit 7, I beat you, I stop, I don't have to keep going. So if I hit 7 real quickly, I don't have to swing extra times.
Right.
If you only hit 1, I have to hit 2, and I'm
done.
That's
match play.
So, well, it is match play, but there's the advantage is the higher seed. I guess the guy that's hit more home runs. But it used to be how many we do this, and we reset them after here, because if one guy hit 25 in a round, then no one was going to catch him. There's no drama at the end. Now it's a time thing. It's matched up. There's two brackets. The winners meet. Okay, it's an exhibition is my point, right? What day in a four-game series do the Yankees and Red Sox say, oh, yeah, tonight's home run derby night, guys. Forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
No. So if you're clowning around about this, just take the World Series out of it and don't worry about it.
And have fun. Exactly.
Give the team the best record.
Right.
Give the fans a show where they don't have to worry about who's going to win the game and the manager has to do this and has to do that. They're not his players, and you're expecting him for 3 hours on a Tuesday night in the summer to figure it all out for World Series advantage doesn't make a lot of sense. So get your popcorn ready, put your feet up, get back and enjoy it, and don't worry about it.
Shorter tonight? I mean, anytime you can remove time where Chris Berman's yelling at me on the television is a good thing. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. All-Star Weekend brings the All-Star break, of course, so we're taking a break. Reds won't be on again until Friday night, but we'll have them Friday and Saturday, 7 o'clock, as Cleveland comes to town. But before we leave the Major League All-Star Weekend festivities for the evening here on the show, should note, former Indiana catcher and slugger, I think is more what he's known for right now,
Mr. Triples,
Kyle Schwarber, ended up winning the MVP honors in the Futures game yesterday in front of almost 44,000 people at the Great American Ballpark. The U.S. team defeated the world team 10-1. He was one of three with a two-run triple. But, I mean, we got to talk a little bit about Kyle Schwarber because not only has been lighting up Tennessee, he was lighting up Chicago for the week he was there, and then he's lighting up Iowa.
Just wherever they put him.
Then he goes over the weekend and lights up Cincinnati yesterday.
Next.
I mean, the guy's killing him. And the only thing appears to be whether the Cubs are going to find a place to purposely put him on their roster, on their Major League roster, and let him play, or if they're going to put him out there as trade bait. But, I mean, this guy's got to be one of the bigger slugging commodities out there in the minors.
You can't trade a guy like that because the vested part of free agency lasts so long. You can keep a young core. If you see, I mean, you're more than welcome to offer them things before that, but you don't have to for a certain time based on their major league service. So
he's not up there yet.
Well,
one of
he went up there for a cup of coffee. Chris Bryant was the same way until they extend these guys. So if all these other guys have big contracts until then, it's probably more than likely they'll keep him in possession instead of trade him because they don't have to pay him. He can come up and hit $1 million, and he just is arbitration eligible after a certain point where he can only make this much money, and then if the next year. So there is some math and science behind it. And the problem is the Cubs carry two catchers already. They carry John Lester's private catcher. And what's bring up Lester's ERA and his win-loss? I know win-loss isn't the biggest thing, but he's three throws, one good game a month. I think Cub fans will agree with that. It's nice, but that one guy is on the roster in that position, and that's what makes Lester. Lester makes $22 million a year or whatever it is.
And he
gets what he wants.
I mean, Schwarber's not necessarily coming up right now certainly not as a defensive catcher, and there's questions of whether a catcher is his position long-term or not, and it's whether the Cubs want to keep him there or whether they want to move him around a little bit too, and they're looking at that direction. But there is a question here as to whether he's a catcher at the major league.
I thought
level.
I saw Joe Maddon say somewhere last week, if Montero gets into some problems, we'll have to look at him. So that's the good news. Why? Because when you hit that well, it's hard to keep you out of the league. You don't have to be a perfect catcher. Not everybody can be, I don't know, Yadier Molina, where you bat 340 and throw out 80% of the runners. You know, that's why he's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. That's why. Not everybody's going to be like that. But the bat in the lineup is the key. And if the Cubs continue not to score runs at maybe the pace they desire. The problem with the Cubs lineup right now, Dave, and it goes back to you're not going to trade Schwarber or any of those guys, really. It's they have too many young guys and too many spots, in my opinion, that when they go cold, it seems like they go cold as a unit. They don't have that veteran bat in there just to get them through some tougher times.
John Lester is 4-8 with a 359.
Well, 359 is not terrible, but remember it's a National League. We only face eight batters a game,
right?
Not nine. 359 is a decent ERA in the American League.
18 starts,
and then Baseball Reference will tell you he's making $20 million a season, and that's that's his personal catcher is with them in the league. So that's part of it. The exciting part of Schwarber is he keeps putting up numbers and producing like this. He will force their hand to do something with him.
Eventually.
Whether it's, hey, stick him in right field on a night when you've got a right or a left-handed pitcher pitching, because not a lot of balls head that, or whatever the platoon system is. Do you need his bat? Do you not need his bat? It's just great to see the kid who has taken every opportunity been presented to him, whether it was USA Baseball after his junior year here and hit a million on that team. And every step of the way, he's produced. And that's the cool thing to see, because you always get worried. You see that pitching daily instead of once every whatever it is. And if you just keep mashing and mashing and mashing what he's doing, at some point they'll find a way to get you in the lineup regardless of who's in front of you, because there's not enough bats usually around to go around. And the Cubs, a lot of money tied up in young guys. A lot of money tied up in a lot of spots. Theo's had a very liberal checkbook from the Ricketts family to a degree. And, again, give me the Cubs record here on the 13th day of July.
Well, they're 47-40.
Nicely done. Maybe they're in the wrong division, right?
Well, that would seem to be the case. spend some money on a couple big players in particular. But the news, you know, the stuff right now for the Cubs, that if you're a Cubs fan, you're looking forward to not only Kyle Schwarber, but the two guys playing, hitting the ball tonight,
Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo.
I mean, they've got a nice young roster.
They do.
And maybe they can get rid of some of these older players. You mentioned Montero, 32-year-old catcher making $12 million. David Ross is 38. He's got to be the personal catcher,
right, for Lester.
He's 38, so I mean, he's not going to be around for long anyways.
Sure, but he only has to catch once a week.
That's right.
So you waste a bench player
on one guy.
He's not even a hitter. Pinch hitting? I wouldn't think so. So whatever makes your $20 million guy
$189
comfortable. Well, that's what's keeping Kyle Schwarber out of the league right now. That, and they don't want to run up his service. When you run up his service, he's quicker. He's ready for free agency quicker. That window shrinks. And when you have prospects that can play that you don't have to shove in the major leagues right away, you get 4, 5, 6 years to – you're not going anywhere. And that money does make it – it doesn't grow on trees. Fans don't want $12 beers. They don't want – they just put two big screens out there, redid the bleachers, did all that stuff. So there's got to be – there's got to be a little windfall in the other direction as well. But that's the Cubs' problem. The Cubs have had a problem every year since 1903, whatever. I've lost track.
It must be a nice problem to finally have too much talent.
I don't know what
it
is.
For your roster.
Well, and it's talented on paper. And guys don't play in a vacuum. We mentioned baseball is a very individualized sport. It is. But you've got to have that balance of young guys, old guys, guys that get the job done every day. You can't start 8 superstar phenom up-and-coming prospects who haven't been through the rigors. Mm-hmm. Year in and year out of 160. Chris Bryant, they just brought up. They were trying to hold him off as long as they could. Rizzo has just come up. Starlin Castro is another name that's been through there. And we're not picking on the Cubs. They have a ton of talent. But losing that talent to bring in veteran guys now, well, then that's going to mess with the finances. And that's just a balance each team has to have, unless you're the Yankees and you just don't care and you throw money at all of it.
And speaking of balancing and working out your finances, Larry Bird still working on his Pacers team. Again, rumor last week they were looking at Jordan Hill. Nothing has come to fruition there, but one thing that has, along with signing Miles Turner and making official the signings of Rodney Stuckey and Monte Ellis, was a trade last week, kind of shoved a little bit under the rug because it's not big names. But a guy who was in his rookie season last year and was statistically the best shooter on the Pacers roster, although he didn't get tons of time, Damon Rudez, was a 29-year-old rookie out of Europe. He has been traded for 6'7 small forward Chase Buttinger. Obviously, U.S. and college basketball fans will remember Buttinger from Arizona. Had a good first couple years in the league and then has had injury problems the last couple years. But a guy that was once a slasher has become more of a shooter of his own right. But what exactly do you think they're doing here other than getting a little younger to maybe a little bit more experience in the NBA?
There you go. A guy can play NBA minutes. Rudesh was great when you threw him in the game and had him shoot corner threes all night long. Did he defend? Did he rebound? Did he get after it? 29-year-old rookie. You've got a guy that's been in the league. He's been hurt. Bird loves damaged goods. Loves him. Mm-hmm. Loves to find
yeah,
that.
He does.
He loves a garage sale. He loves the flea market. And,
well, he gets 6 years of experience with two fewer years on the clock at 27 instead of 29.
And I think you've just answered the question. And it's a guy, if he's healthy, he can get up and down the court. Arizona does not walk the ball. I know that was a long time ago. But if he's healthy, he's got multiple tools. And Rudez is more of a spot-up shooter type than he is rebounder. Maybe doesn't get up and down the floor as much. Bird loved him. If you saw the quotes from Bird, he's like, he's the greatest guy ever. We feel bad trading him.
He was in the 2012 slam dunk contest and then has been sidelined with torn meniscus in his knee.
Yeah, those don't heal, do they? The one deal that might bother if you're a Pacer fan, Luis Scola goes to Toronto, 1 year, $3 million. If I'm the Pacers,
it'd be nice to match that.
Well, that's not yeah. overshooting the moon there. Number no. one, it's a locker room guy. It's a guy that he showed you, and he averaged 9.5, 6.5 last year for $3 million. My goodness, they must think, but the Pacers, I guess, know him better than anybody else. If they choose not to get into a bidding war with him, there must be something on there they don't like, whether it's age or anything else. But that's, no West, no Hibbert, no Scola. That's your entire front court last year that's gone. And then Rudesh was 6'9", and he's not part of that. But, again, you're turning over everybody up there.
Up front,
And that's going to be holes in practice. That's going to be holes in the locker room. But that's what you do. When things don't go the way you want them to go, whether it's chemistry, whether it's on the court, we're going to go from a defensive-based rebound, get-in-your-face team to run up and down, shoot more than you do team. You have to change those pieces. You just can't reprogram Hibbert, West, and I guess to a degree, Scola, and say, now here's how we're going to do it. It doesn't work that way.
And if people paid attention this weekend, I mean, what I saw this weekend was articles talking about Paul George maybe being a player at the four. We've heard a lot of that. But what I saw and heard and read in there, well, but still, here's what I read. I read the folks like Frank Vogel and Larry Bird talking about how he can play the four and he can be effective and yada, yada, yada. And then Paul George in the exact same set of quotes coming out and say, it'll just be for a minute or two at a time kind of thing. Which,
here's what Paul
I'm
George,
not sure there's a disconnect there or not. But the quotes sound like
here's why I think George doesn't think that right now. And the other part of that article was he's not doing everything that Paul George is used to doing at the moment. Once he, and this is Bird saying this, they liked it because they like the offensive mismatch more than the defensive mismatch.
Sure.
So when George finds out that if some team's going to go at him with 6'9", 240,
mm-hmm. he's going to feel
he's going to eat.
Yeah.
He's going to be the big dog at the table, and he might change his tune quite quickly because George is good enough. Post defense isn't on how big you are. It's whether you're properly positioned. It's whether you understand angles. It's whether, and they can teach you that in 15 minutes.
Well,
George is a good enough basketball
player. Let's keep in mind,
he's
a pretty good defender when he came up.
Yeah,
that was the first thing he did.
The reason he enjoys perimeter defending on guys maybe a little smaller than him because he's quick enough at his height because his wingspan and height is a huge advantage. Now, if he thinks he's going to get stuck on the post with 6'11", well, there's other ways to fight that. You get into a guy, you try to root him out, or you use your quickness to steal the ball when he puts it on the floor, you dive and take it, great. What it's going to do is, on the defensive end in these couple of minutes, is he's not going to be running through screens, he's not going to be burning it on the offensive end and the defensive end.
It's going to be more physical.
And coming back from injury, like you mentioned, if it's only going to be a few minutes a night on that side, what's going to happen is, Paul, when you score the first two times, the timeout's going to get that guy out. They're going to put somebody else in, and then you're right back to normal guarding whoever you're guarding. So I wouldn't worry about that. And that's why I like what Bird said there. He goes, hey, we don't care about the defensive mismatch. We think we're going to eat on the offensive side of that
exactly
angle.
Right.
And I think he is right. And that's if George is healthy.
Yeah.
And if that, and again, if you want him to take some defensive possessions off, guarding a guy that drifts out to 15 feet on a rotation is a lot different than running through screens with the number one wing scorer, which he's defended in years past.
And we'd rather not have him doing that. We do need him to score.
George, hey, folks, George Hill can handle that.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. We'll talk a little golf when we get back from the break. You're in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCO.
Brought to you this afternoon by Williams Brothers Healthcare Pharmacy, a family-owned business offering personalized expert advice on a wide range of pharmacy services. 574 South Landmark Avenue here in Bloomington. Williams Brothers, committed to creating customers for life.
333-2665 is the phone number. We've got the third golf major of the year starting on Thursday. 1:30 here Indiana time in the morning, so get up real early if you want to watch that.
Coverage begins 4 a.m. on ESPN.
But you want to track it online, I'm sure.
Sleep
Stay
in,
up all night long
sleep
and
enjoy
all the way into the next
in
day.
The morning.
Of course, it is noteworthy for a number of reasons, but the top reason is the fact that we've got a chance at a Grand Slam with Jordan Spieth having won the Masters and the U.S. Open, not to mention he just won yesterday in a playoff for his second victory at the John Deere Classic. It's certainly weird to go into a major and not be talking at all about Tiger Woods because there are other stories. Jordan Spieth is obviously first. Rory McIlroy hurt his ankle. He is out of this one. Ricky Fowler's won the Players and won this weekend also at the Scottish Open, which is the double there has happened once or twice over the years. So we got a number of stories, and they all seem to be about the younger set at this point.
Well, the guys that are winning. Golf's a meritocracy. You shouldn't talk about guys based on reputation. I know it moves the meter, but no one cares that Tiger Woods put 3 out of 4 rounds under par at Greenbrier last time he went out. He was T-100 and whatever he was. Mm-hmm. That's not a pat on the back. The reason you have to look at Woods in a sense this week is, well, he set the Grand Slam.
Course, yes.
And he set the Grand Slam record here. 19 under par, 269 back in 2000 and 2005. Won again. Not a lot of guys have two old course wins underneath their belt, and I don't think there's many this century. Maybe Nicklaus and maybe Woods. That's kind of the rarefied air you get into with these guys. But he's not playing well enough. The guy couldn't hit the biggest fairways on tour at Greenbrier, and the ones here are just as wide, but there's not any pot bunkers lingering out there to fall into either. So can Woods win? Why? I would never say he couldn't, because when you saw him play in 2010, 2005, and 2000, he's played it 3 times. He knows how to get the ball around the course here. They do have wide fairways, so if he kind of doesn't miss it, he'll kind of be okay. And it only has to
kind of doesn't put it in the firth.
And if he just he's only got one chance at that, that's the good news. The other part is, in major competition, the one thing you cannot rule out from Woods is the been there, done that factor. On Sunday on the back nine, if he's got a one-shot lead, he's not going to go, geez, how do I get through this, as maybe Jordan Spieth might, or Ricky Fowler might. Fowler's never won a major tournament. Spieth won 2 in a row. We know that. He's kind of shown that way. But Jordan Spieth hit a really bad shot with three holes to play at Chambers Bay.
That's right.
And made a double bogey when he had a three-shot lead.
Shot.
So
no question.
Exactly right. And put himself in a precarious spot where his fate would not be determined by his own putter.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Johnson determined his fate that day.
Well, he made a nice play to make up for it, but it still required a little help.
He had a three-shot lead, and going to the final hole, he should have had a two-shot lead, and something unbelievable would have tied him at that point. Not a 4-footer to force a playoff, which didn't happen, and that's water under the bridge. But with Woods, he's been there, he's done that, he knows how that course bounces, he knows the drill there. I can't write him off completely this week. Is he a favorite to win? No. Tiger Woods is 20-1 to win this week, and Spieth is 15-1 to win the Grand Slam. If that puts it in any perspective for you, Spieth's got a better chance to win the next two majors than the Woods has to win this one. But he still has to be looked at. But the story with the younger guys, David, those are the guys that are winning. You brought up Fowler. He won the Players. It's a hard tournament to win.
Yep.
He won the Scottish Open last week. He stuffed it to about 2 feet on 18, tapped it home for birdie to win the tournament. You don't get ranked highly in golf because you got cool pants, a cool sponsor, and kids love you.
Right.
You
get
to
on TV that way.
You do get on well, and the other reason you do is you're playing on Sunday.
But you
got to
win. And he
That's
does
exactly
now finally.
Right.
I mean, a year or two ago, we were talking about Ricky Fowler being that overrated guy who never really got it done when it counted. He was a match play guy. He was a college guy. He had won in Charlotte.
Yeah.
McIlroy he had all
there.
The promise in the world, but now what you're talking about, and he had a great year last year in the majors also, so you're talking about a guy that's starting to show those results. Winning back-to-back weeks on in whether no matter what the tournaments are is awfully hard. But we have seen the Scottish Open, British Open double here, and it wasn't that long ago that Mickelson did it.
13, yeah, that was the last time that had happened. But yeah, Fowler can play. Last time Fowler played it at St. Andrews, I looked this up today. He opened with 79. 7-9, 7 over par, and shot 67, 71, 67 to finish T-14.
That's a pair of 67s.
Well, that's a pair of 67s.
After so almost giving
it
away.
Those are things you have to look at. Rory McIlroy here went 63-80 in the same tournament, different days.
Yeah.
Wrong side of the draw. Wonder what side of the draw that was.
Right.
It's not hard to figure out. But when you throw that in, that's what makes this golf tournament impossible to project, because you can't tell me what the weather's going to do. You can't tell me that the late-early start's going to be better than the early-late start. You don't know that.
Don't know till that day.
Tiger Woods was looking for the third leg of the Grand Slam, and I believe it was at Muirfield in 2000. And shot 82 or 3 in the third round
yeah.
because the weather turned on him, and that's why this is a very hard thing to do. Horses only have to win 3 of them. Golfers have to win 4, and no one in the modern era has done it. But you look at young guys that are playing well, and the reason they're playing well is they're putting up the results, and it's simple as that. This is not a media-driven angle to draw interest into it. Rory McIlroy has played unbelievable golf here in multiple events where he would have mm-hmm. been – Spieth might have been the favorite just because he'd won the last 2 weeks,
right.
but you'd put every dollar
yeah,
on McIlroy.
Rory was still
Spieth,
great.
I don't think Spieth played her in competition, so that's another thing. But he never played at Chambers Bay in competition. He's played the Masters twice in competition, led after 54 holes the first time, mm-hmm. and almost set the Masters record, every record except the 72-hole record the other time. He's an amazing player.
Well, before
that's why we're talking about Spieth. That's why we're talking about Fowler, and that's why we're talking about McIlroy.
333-2665 is the phone number. Before we go too far in depth into Jordan Spieth, let's go to Rory McIlroy before we hit this
poor
break.
Guy.
Injures his ankle playing soccer with his buddies. You're never going to tell a guy don't do that.
Nope,
go
bad.
Out, have fun. Still young, what, 26
yeah.
at this point in time. He's got 4 majors. I mean, it's an unbelievable
three,
number himself.
3/4 of the career.
We are understandably stuck on Jordan Spieth right now for darn good reason. But Rory McIlroy's got 4 of them right now at 26, and that's pretty damn good itself. But what does this miss by having or not having, in this case, the defending champion and the number one player, number two player? I don't know where exactly that ranking is right
one.
This minute. That's okay. So the number one player and the defending champion of this championship is not here this week. What does it do to this championship?
Nothing, because they've done it before.
And because of Jordan Spieth?
No. In 2008, Tiger Woods broke his leg in 2 places and tore his ACL and MCL against Rocco Media at the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. He was the number one player in the world. He didn't play at St. Andrews.
Right.
The month later, right? So they've been here, done that. It's happened. It's part of golf. There's only been about 4 or 5 guys in history that haven't defended their title because of some injury mm-hmm. reason. So it doesn't happen very often, but these are not no one pulls out of a major. This is what these guys put their schedule around.
Right.
They put their practice time around it. They put their soccer games around it because they know I can do it this weekend. I can't do it next because I'm ramping up to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely unlucky and unfortunate. It's no different than tripping and falling down the stairs. Chris Kirk broke his hand this week playing backyard baseball with his 2 sons.
Yeah,
it happens. Life happens. It gets in the way of stuff. So he can do anything he wants. These people are human beings just like us.
Yeah, well.
And you'd love to
26,
see it all in a bubble. Sure.
Go have some fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's
you got a pocket full of money. What do you want to do? Just sit and watch your investments rolling all
right,
day? No.
Right.
Kids are going to be kids. And since none of us have been 26 and had a pocket full of $50 million a year, you can't.
Well, I think
really,
he said if he wanted to stop playing golf and just go to soccer too,
he's thought of that.
He'd do all right.
And McIlroy said many times, he goes, "I'm not going to be playing golf when I'm old."
No, he's not.
Not
I mean,
he's
a little different dude.
He
so.
Is.
Look, it's a shame he's not going to be there because he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yep, and, that's the other problem.
He does have 4 majors, so he's one of the best.
Plenty of other
there.
Guys will take up that mantle. Don't you worry.
We will talk about who will be playing this weekend when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Again, all of Major League Baseball is off for a few days for their All-Star game. We will have the Reds baseball again for you on Friday and Saturday, 7 o'clock both nights as they host the Cleveland Indians. So taking the week off, obviously, just like the rest of Major League Baseball is. But the third major, golf major of the year starts Thursday morning for us here in the United States, and of course over there, as it's 6:30 a.m., gets light early in northern Scotland.
And the other thing is everybody plays off one tee, which
yes.
I love. That's
absolutely.
How golf should be played. But daylight hinders that at some other tournaments, so that's why you don't get that. But you're in the dead of summer over there.
And up there,
long
you get about
daylight,
5
buddy.
10, hours
15,
worth of,
10:30.
Of night. Yeah, it's late. I mean, the last tee time is 4:30. The first one's 6:30 in the morning.
4:30 p.m., so it's a 4-hour,
yeah, that's almost 12 straight hours of tee times.
That's why Ivor Robson gets all the credit, where he announces all the players and never leaves his spot for 4 straight days. But,
hopefully they have a bucket or something for him. But
I think they don't. I asked a guy once about that. He says, no, he does it as a point of pride. So he almost fasts to get to that spot, and there you go.
That's
more information than you'd ever want.
Seems unnecessary.
It does, and that's kind of what I was going with it, but it's one of those traditions that folks over here don't think is a big tradition. And,
yeah.
Well, what are you going to do?
So the players.
People probably laugh at Martha the Mop Lady.
Well, that's exactly right. I understand that. So the players involved this weekend, obviously the big focus then, without Rory McIlroy, and of course because of what's happened earlier this year, Jordan Spieth already the holder of the first two majors of the year, 21. Is he 22 yet?
He'll be 22 on the 27th, okay, 2 weeks from today, and he might have three major championships this
almost.
Year.
Almost. He can drink champagne out of the claret jug if and when he wins it.
Well,
but
he can do that anyhow. Just can't get caught.
I mean, look, every time we say there's no possible way he could keep doing this on this streak, because it has been, I mean, it's a couple years now, but it's been a streak where he went from
not
having his card to all of a sudden, you know, he's the number one or two player in the world, yep. And he's got both majors and a chance at the Grand Slam. Can't keep doing it, can he?
Yes, he can, because he's that good, he's that talented, and there's nothing to indicate that he wouldn't do that. That's the other thing. It's not like he got lucky. It's not like he fluked it. Remember, he had the 54-hole lead the first time he played Augusta, a course where you have to know every inch, hump, bump, and break, and he figured that out like that.
All right.
Okay, so that's done with. He didn't win in 2014 on tour, but he won at the Australian Open, flew across the world, played the next weekend down at Isleworth, and beat Stenson by 11 shots, 10 shots to win whatever that made-up Tiger tournament was. Yeah. On a course, Woods lived 10 years and played and beat him by 24 shots.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not fluking it.
No.
Right? So he wins a playoff over Patrick Reed and Sean O'Hara at Tampa early in the year. He gets back on the winning train. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to the majors. Boom. Wins at Augusta. Wins it. Remember where everybody said, geez, I can't believe the guy's playing the week after Augusta. So he goes to Hilton Head. Honors his commitment there. Shoots 71
or something. Nah, something
it was
bad
even
the first
par.
Round.
And then he shot 62 the next day. Or 73, 62 or something ridiculous. This week he just did 71, 64 on his way to the onto the John Deere Classic. So he does all the right things, says all the right things. And his golf game, the knock on it a year ago was maybe not the best ball striker, maybe a little crooked with the tee ball, maybe not the greatest iron player, but anything around the green, he gets up and down and he makes every putt he looks at. Well, that hasn't changed, but now he's hitting a lot of fairways, and now he's hitting a lot more greens.
Yeah.
He gets a lot more birdie chances. And you saw the shots he played on the weekend where he had to pitch it out of the rough, just hitting the right spots of the green. And from the chin up, he's 40.
Yeah, he's got it all.
He really does have it all.
So, when it comes to the short
point,
stuff.
No, I'm not surprised. Maybe I'm surprised how fast it's happened, but I'm not surprised it is happening, because when you watch him play, he has one bad round and then a really good round.
Yeah.
It seems, and that's after major championships too sometimes. And it just blows your mind.
Well, let's
to
talk
stay
about
in that moment.
I mean, obviously the short game is going to travel, you know, and do you well just about wherever you are, but looking at St. Andrews in particular, is the short game the most important part? Because this is, I mean, again, these British Open courses are traditionally slower greens. You know, it's not about putting the laser fast, you know, Augusta type greens or US Open greens. It's a different type of game. And it's one that we don't, I mean, Jordan Spieth hasn't played here before. Obviously, your short game serves you well everywhere, but is that the crucial part of St. Andrews?
No, the crucial part of St. Andrews is staying out of the bunkers. That's the easy thing. Big fairways are rewarded if you hit them in right spots. Tiger Woods didn't hit any bunkers. Not one bunker on the course. He shot 19 under par.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done. Just stay out of trouble. The winning scores at St. Andrews. Last time out, 2010, Louis Oosthuizen won by 7 shots, 16 under par.
Yeah.
That was 2010. Daly won in a playoff, bad weather that year, 6 under par in 2005. Mm-hmm. Or in
95.
Daly was in 95.
Yeah.
Woods won at 14 under in 2005. In 2010, he's 19 under. Faldo won at 16 or 17 under or back in 90. So that's where you see scoring works here. And who makes more birdies on tour than Spieth?
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing. And if his driver's okay, just like you saw at Chambers Bay, wasn't very good.
No.
But when you need to make birdies, who was up there in the top three or four in birdies?
Right.
He always finds a way to get the game of golf is getting the ball in the hole. I can tell you the best ball strikers on tour, and you'll never hear their names mentioned in any majors. I can tell you the best putters on tour, and you never hear their names mentioned in majors. Why? You can't have one game.
You got to do all. Yeah,
you have to do it all, and you got to be smart from the ears up.
Right.
And that's the huge double check mark for him. All these other guys, and you'll hear the commentators talk about it, say, oh, man, well, he's got to go through this a few times to see what it feels like. He went through it once.
Yeah.
One time. Bubba Watson beat him. Couldn't make any birdies coming home at Augusta.
Yep.
Comes back a year later and breaks the 36-hole, 54-hole, and missed one on 18 that would have set the record. That's where he's at. That's incomprehensible
Yeah.
for 21 in 360 days well, or whatever.
There's a reason his and Rory's were like this too. There's a reason both of them get compared to Tiger Woods at this stage of their career.
Exactly
let's look at a couple other guys real quickly.
We're running out of time.
One guy with a major and two guys that are among the better players without majors so far, but all of them, we heard their names an awful lot over this last major weekend. Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, and Louis Oosthuizen. These are guys, I mean, Louis had a bad first round playing with Tiger Woods, but the three rounds after that, he was absolutely on fire and came home on fire at the U.S. Open. Day could barely walk all weekend and still managed to finish where he did in just a really gutty effort. And Dustin Johnson, of course, we've seen this a couple times out of him where he just can't make, you know, he makes a mistake down the stretch, something crucial, obviously a Chambers Bay, it was a couple putts, but he's getting himself in position.
And eventually has been since 2010 he's been doing it.
You almost have to break through.
And that's the scar tissue that he's had I think he just turned 30, that Spieth barely had. So you have to make your own luck sometimes. You have to make putts. Johnson will be helped on the greens at St. Andrews because they will not be lightning quick. He should hit every fairway and he'll hit it farther than anybody, which puts a wedge in his hand, which means he should hit it close to anybody. Hit it closer. You can't make 12-footers, hit 8 feet. Make 8-footers.
There you go.
But Dustin Johnson's talent is unbelievable. You can argue with him. The problem is from the chin up.
Right. Which might be the best thing going for him, considering he keeps blowing stuff, at least to get him into the next one.
There is no better weather player out there. So if the wind blows and you get a headwind, he's going to hit it 300 in the headwind instead of 350 as normal. That's a huge, huge advantage. Jason Day's illness, nobody knows what this is. He's been to 1,000 doctors trying 1,000 different things. I can't tell you this is a good week to line him up on your fantasy team. I can't do that. Oosthuizen, last time he was here. Obviously, 1,600 par, won
by 7
shots.
And he's healthy again and playing well again.
He's always got that health
bubble.
That's
always a question,
living over his head. But again, you saw when he is healthy at Chambers Bay, he was finished third there. And that's any guy that's won on this course and played well at this course. And also, Oosthuizen's also played in other tournaments here where they use St. Andrews.
Yeah.
He's torn up.
You're not going to be here Wednesday. Who's your pick for the Open?
Give me the California Chrome. Or wait, who won the American Pharoah?
Whatever.
Give me the American Pharoah.
Secretariat.
He's going to be the American Pharoah if he wins that one. Only Ben Hogan in 1953 have won the first three majors in a calendar year in a row. That's some heavy, heavy lifting right there.
All right, folks, music means we've got to take off. Terry will be joining me Wednesday. We'll talk a little bit more British Open also on Wednesday. And more, of course. So join us then, won't you? You've been in the zone.